staff aboard. A communications shakeup is said to be afoot, as former North Carolina Congressman Mark Meadows is now running operations at the White House as Mr. Trump's fourth chief of staff in about 3 years. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Major League Baseball is pumping the brakes on rumors surrounding the start of the season. The league released a statement today saying they haven't asked any government officials to approve a plan that addresses the season getting up and running. The statement comes after unnamed sources said games would be played in Arizona with no fans. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association Annual Convention in Washington, D.C., I spoke with Dr. John Howe, AVMA president, about One Health.
One Health is really a collaboration between physicians and veterinarians or public health officials. For example, in Minnesota, our state public health veterinarian deals with zoonotic diseases, rabies, for example. Animals are sentinels for humans, and humans are sentinels for some infections in animals.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
An estimated 175 million Americans will get stimulus checks directly deposited into their checking accounts over the next 2 weeks. Now, there's still a lot of confusion regarding people who do not file a tax return, especially elderly Americans. David Cerner with AARP says there has to be a quick way to get money to people who don't file taxes.
We already know from the serious number of questions we've gotten from people, how do I get this, what do I file, what do I do, that there's a lot of confusion out there. We want these payments to be done automatically.
According to Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, elderly Americans will not have to file tax returns.
The president authorized me to say that anybody that has Social Security recipients won't need to file a new tax return, and we'll have that. If we don't have your direct deposit information, we'll be putting up a web portal so that you can put that up. It is a very large priority. The president has made clear we want to get this money quickly into your hands.
A possible light at the end of the tunnel regarding the coronavirus. With the details, here's USA Radio Network's Robin Walensky.
Some signs of progress in fighting the coronavirus in terms of flattening the curve. Still, many more people expected to pass away in the U.S. In New York City, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo says the number of hospitalizations down slightly. Michigan and Louisiana still seeing their numbers rise.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located at the historic Large House, 119 Main Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programs.
Well, good afternoon. This is Chris Phelan coming to you live from the studios of the Hunterdon County Chamber Radio at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, bringing to you another special edition here on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, brought to you by the Chamber and the County Office of Economic Development. We're going to be talking to Chris Bianco, who is the owner of Team Logic and has a little bit of history here as well with Hunterdon Chamber Radio. So I think, Chris, we've got you on the line, and you're looking good there on the live feed. So how are things down in South Carolina? Do we got you, Chris? Are we working it through? I can see you fine. I just can't hear you. So we'll keep trying to troubleshoot that. Maybe I'll take a minute or two and just talk a little bit about some of the things that are happening up here at the New Jersey home front. Again, I can't stress enough my support to all of our first responders that are keeping us safe as all of us are still going through, you know, this pandemic, how it's impacting us here in New Jersey. It's affecting all of us throughout the region, throughout the entire country, and throughout the world. So I've got to send my hats off and my special thanks to, again, all of our first responders, our law enforcement. Kudos again. I keep mentioning this, the folks up at Hunterdon Healthcare, truly on the front lines, our doctors, our nurses, the technicians, the entire staff that is keeping Hunterdon Medical Center, you know, moving forward, and, you know, the entire team that is, you know, working really 24/7, 7 days a week. And we really want to give them kudos. Want to thank the Office of Emergency Management for Hunterdon County. I really want to thank the folks up at the Department of Board of Health. And I think we have Chris Bianco on the line. This is, I think we're good, Chris. You there?
Yes, I am.
I'm apologize. Here. I think that was operator error on my side. So I truly apologize. Our little false start, but want to welcome Chris Bianco here to this special edition. Chris has got many hats. He's got a great long history, was really on the foundational start of Chamber Radio. We're pushing now over 10 years, Chris. Can you believe it?
Yes, I can, because I was sitting there on the first show and been involved ever since.
Yeah,
so
our first
been
broadcast.
A great experience and a fantastic outlet.
It has been, and you know, it's been kind of challenging and tough, you know, not having our hosts come in on a daily basis and all the energy and life that they bring here to the Chamber studio, you know, with their guests and their shows and their enthusiasm. But I do encourage folks to go visit our website. We've got a special page set up just for the coronavirus shows. We've also got a podcast page that you can go back and listen to previous shows of our great hosts and team that keeps us on board. But in this special edition, Chris, I'm going to put your technology and your IT hat on. You're the owner of Team Logic IT as well, and wanted to spend a little time talking about technology issues in this day and age. You know, we are all facing these challenges of the COVID-19 impact, and no doubt this workforce shifting over to a remote world in so many regards. We still have folks that are out there in our service industry, as I shared, in our medical industry that are interacting with you know, essential employees interacting with customers and the public. We've got essential retail that's open. But a large portion of our workforce in this country has shifted over. And that has, I'm sure, created tremendous opportunities, at the same time strain, but also folks out there that aren't looking to do good in terms of, you know, possibly breaking in, hacking, and causing harm to businesses and operations as we, you know, really maximize technology in today's you know, environment.
Right. No doubt, Chris. It's for the last couple of weeks, everybody's been working very hard to get through the chaos for their own personal safety, and then their business, just making sure their business is somehow getting back up and running. Very few people give any understanding, because we take technology for granted, that when you start to take your business processes virtual, that you don't have the same protections anymore than you did when you were somehow in that one building. And unfortunately, there's a large group of people unknown that have realized that and are going to take advantage of it any way they can, because the dark web and the world of hacking is a business, and that's an opportunity for them.
Yeah, I find it amazing, not being an IT person, hence we had issues right at the beginning, me operating the board. I'm still a little rusty on the board, but doing okay, that, you know, we haven't had, knock on wood, thank God, you know, more issues in the world of technology. When you just look at the bandwidth that's out there with, you know, our children home and doing their schooling remotely.
Right.
You look at colleges throughout the country all shifting over, the workforce shifting over. all the sectors now reliant on an infrastructure. I got to say, thus far, it's been pretty amazing from my minor perspective, you know, in terms of how IT has performed.
Yeah, well, it's great that we've taken advantage of it. It's great that we had it in place to begin with. But unfortunately, you're not going to hear the ugly stories until a little bit later. And we already got some ugly stories, don't get me wrong.
Right.
They're just not taking center stage because if you take Maslow's hierarchy, technology is not going to be as important as our home, our health, and our survival. You know, technology is not nearly going to make that priority. But as soon as the health and the home has been secured, we're now going to eventually learn, and the news cycle is going to focus on the other items that we haven't looked at. And there are things going on right now that we don't know about, but we will learn about because there's people that are taking advantage of it as we speak.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, folks that aren't in the IT sphere or thinking about it, we take a lot of this for granted, you know, at the end of the day. So I'd love to kind of get, you know, some of your thoughts on what are some of the things, you know, that we can start to do as businesses and as employers and employees to start to take stock on, you know, coming up with a little bit of a strategy around, you know, preventing some of this. And a lot of it, I would think, is preventable. I mean, ultimately, there are going to be bad actors, but I would think you'd have some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, well, just like with the COVID-19 crisis that we're going through, the challenge of any organization is education and awareness. And so now we've been trying to deal with that issue with our health and the medical world. We have the same issue now with the technical world. So let's go through it really quick. So everybody decided at some point that we had to disband our workforce, and we're all working from home. A very large section of us are working from home. We got kids that are doing school at home. We got teachers that are home teaching. We got professors, and we got businesses that are doing that as well. Now, that's fine, but the next thing you got to understand is somehow, some way, those people have to have data and information that is necessary for the function of business. And now that data has left the building, and now it's sitting on somebody's computer in somebody's house, whether it's email or a file or a Zoom meeting, whatever it is, that data is sitting there. So whereas when in my world I have to protect a business when it's inside a box, now that business is in multiple homes. If it's an eight employee company, I got eight locations I got to worry about. If it's a 500 employee company, I got 500 locations I got to worry about. And if we compare what's going on in your house versus what's going on in a business, they are mostly night and day. We go with bare bones and acceptable in the home, but that is not appropriate for what I would do to protect a business. So the first thing you got to do is have some awareness. We got to let the employees know that while they're having this data sitting at home, it's got to be protected, and they got to take care of it, and they got to get rid of it as soon as possible, because there's basically running around with all that data in the wide open spaces, potentially giving it to anybody that wants to get at it. The second thing we got to worry about is that they don't have the awareness of how somebody could break into their house and get that information. So we got to let you know about that as well. So we can go through that, and that's kind of the four pieces that I've put together in terms of the hierarchy of things we probably should discuss. And quite honestly, I could probably discuss each one of them for about an hour, But all I want to do is give touch points and let people start thinking about it and being more aware about it.
Chris, just real quick, you know, when you say we shouldn't keep that information at home, so what's something, you know, very simple that anyone should be doing on a daily or, you know, throughout the day, you know, when they're, you know, taking company or organizational information onto their home laptop or even on their PDA or tablet?
Well, first thing you got to know is you got to know how important that data is to not only your company, but also the client that you're working on that's associated with your company. So if it's high security stuff such as credit card numbers, user IDs, passwords, that's pretty important stuff, and you don't want that stuff sitting around on your computer. So that should immediately be locked up somewhere, or should stay on the computers that are in that are part of the organization.
Is that done via like putting something on the cloud and then maybe, I don't know, clearing your web browser, or are there other quick tips?
Well, most of the time we unfortunately hand it back and forth through email.
Okay.
And email is a pretty simple option to get into. If I can get on your computer, I can get on your email.
Okay.
So if you and I are, if you need to get on to, so let's say you need to do something in the chamber radio, and you said, Chris, I need to do this. What's the password and the user ID? If I send you both the user ID and the password in the same email, anybody else that gets to see that email now has the access to that information. So the first thing that should happen is they should be separated into two emails. Better than that, that should be an encrypted email, but most people don't use quote-unquote encrypted email. But beyond that, we have to worry about the fact that your computer by itself is not up to date and potentially it can be hacked. And so even before we get into the data, we got to worry about just how somebody could be getting that information that's sitting on your computer. One thing to have it on your computer, it's another thing to stop somebody from getting onto your computer to get it. And so that's where we could put all the locks and we can put all the precautions in place, but if somebody allows somebody to get into your computer because you clicked on the wrong type of email, and that's called phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, if you do that, then we've lost our defenses. So today, the concept of phishing has been around for a long time, and we've all seen it. It's emails that come to you that you don't recognize, that you go, this is not mine, or it doesn't look like it came from somebody that I recognize. Those are pretty obvious. Some of the things that you notice in those phishing scams of bad grammar, terrible spelling, artificially created logos. It might be generic, like Dear Amazon User or something like that. And you recognize them right off the bat, and we delete them. But what I challenge you is that there are more sophisticated ones out there that are going to give you pause or you might not recognize. And so we have to heighten each user out there, their understanding of email and the potential of phishing email, so that they're more cautious about clicking on and accepting any email that could be dangerous. So the four things you basically should recognize is you should always look at who it's coming from. So look at the email address and who it's coming from. The second thing, and that should match who it's going to, you know, that there's something in the body of the email that represents that individual. The second one is it usually has a time-sensitive message that you have to do something quickly. It has some type of file attachment or a link. And lastly, it's going to somehow ask you to do something to resolve a problem. And if all four of things are built into that email, you need to have some worry and some suspiciousness about whether it really is true or not.
And then taking the next step on that, you know, once you've deleted the email, should you be doing anything else, you know, with that email in particular?
No, if you simply delete it, you're fine. The issue is if you actually act upon it.
Okay.
It's the acting upon it that's the problem. And every person will tell you who's ever got caught in a phishing scam, it usually happened during a time of frenetic action, where they were very distracted by other things that were going on. They saw the issue, it piled on to the rest of their day, and they said, I just got to take care of this, and they click on it, and they've launched Pandora's box. So whenever you see those four things that I just described,
sure,
that email, perhaps you should just let it sit there for a minute, go back and look at it a little later on and make sure that you are absolutely sure that it's something you need to act upon. Or, better yet, don't act upon the email. Go to the source of who sent it to you and say, hey, I got this email. Can you tell me a little bit more about it? And after you get in touch with them, they say, what email are you talking about? Now you know that there's a disconnect.
What are your thoughts, Chris, for especially our small businesses? You know, we have some that probably still operate on maybe a remote login to get back to their emails. Some are working on maybe servers that are at their particular office versus a platform like, I'll just use it as an example, like Microsoft Office 365 that lets you go remotely. Are there advantages to one of those over the other?
Well, if you're going to, let's take Office 365 for just a second. So Office 365 has been built for the ability to be mobile. So I can go, whenever I go anywhere, I can go onto Office 365 on my phone or on my computer or on somebody else's computer. The danger of going on somebody else's computer is that that computer now has the ability to see how you potentially logged in to Office 365.
Okay.
Now, if you happen to have, there's a program out there called a keylogger. A keylogger is a program that's running silently on your computer if it's been hacked, and I can check, I can see when you type every character that you type in order and where you went. So if I see where you went in a browser and then I see you type a user ID and password, I've got everything.
Wow.
Now, there are ways to defend yourself about that. One of the ways is to never go on a computer that's not yours. Or that, and I'm sorry, you can't even trust your kids, your parents, your neighbor. Every one of them may be their worst defense. So you really can't do that. You never should go on a public Wi-Fi. There really isn't a reason to go on public Wi-Fi anymore. Everybody has the ability to do a hotspot with their phone, so you never should do that. And lastly, now we're starting to enact something called multi-factor authentication. So for anything that's a critical application in your world, you should enact multi-factor authentication. And you've all seen it. Multi-factor authentication usually happens where you sign in, and then it gives you an email somewhere else with a code, or it gives you a text message with a code, and then you have to type that code in. The reason multi-factor authentication is so important is because the bad guys would have to both have your user ID, your password, and your phone, or some other thing to gain access. And now it's getting much more difficult to achieve. So anything that's sensitive, like bank accounts, computer email accounts, you should all have them on multi-factor authentication. Did I lose you?
You did for a second. You're just back.
Okay. But
you were talking about the multi-factor identification. Is that a certain software that you download, or how does that operate, and what can,
many of them now are built into the very critical application. So okay. If you go into your bank account, they usually have a setting for that. If you go into Office 365, they have a setting for that. So you just have to look in each operating system, each program for whatever might be have the multi-factor authentication concept.
Okay. Is that something that you can do as well? Like, I'm just thinking out loud again about emails. Is that something that can be done and implemented to protect emails every time you log in?
Yeah. So every time I go into Office 365, I get a it comes on my phone and it says I have to approve that I'm allowing myself to get on Office 365. Therefore, if somebody stole my user ID and password to Office 365 to get to my email,
okay,
and I get an approval request on my phone and I said, I didn't do that. Now I know that somebody's trying to hack into my email.
And you can, that's a setting that you'd have to go in and activate?
Yeah, you'd have to go into Office 365 to set that.
Okay, well, that's great. Great advice in terms of that. Let's talk a little bit about this word. We talked a little about phishing, you know, at the end of the day, and that's phishing with a P. I think a lot of people want to get out and do phishing with an F soon, but you know, the phishing. Let's talk about bombing. You know, at the end of the day, I'm not even sure what that means in the world of IT myself.
Yeah, well, this has made the news because it's actually associated with the Zoom virtual conferencing software right now. It's called Zoom bombing. And there's actually, the media has actually messed this up a little bit. There's actually three, dare I say, flavors of this, of Zoom bombing. And it's not fair to Zoom in all likelihood because it's any virtual conferencing software that might have this problem. But Zoom is the most widely used right now virtual conferencing software out there, so it just got linked to them. So the first one is Zoom. People can get on to Zoom, your Zoom conference calls, and listen in to very important dialogues that are happening that might be very strategic to your business. And the way to protect that is to constantly change the code that's associated with each meeting.
I've seen a couple of folks not do that, and I inadvertently dropped into a meeting because it was saved in my browser. So it's kind of interesting.
That's right. So the onus is on the meeting organizer. They should be changing the code for every meeting. But for expediency, because we've all gone into meetings and for 20 people and you're waiting for 25% of them to get on because they're having technical trouble or they got the wrong code or they got the wrong link or they got the, and so you're killing 20 minutes or 10 minutes of a meeting because just getting the meeting started took too long. So instead, what we're doing is we're sharing these links and we're not changing them, but now I can get into somebody else's meeting if I happen to have an old link. That's pretty dangerous.
It is. It was pretty I felt embarrassed because I did that literally yesterday. I won't say who, but I jumped in and they're having a meeting and I'm like, hi, bye.
Now it gets one step worse than that. Now we have the one where somebody can get on, and if you're amongst a very large group, you're not even recognized. Nobody's even paying attention. So if it's a strategic meeting, you're now getting company secrets.
Wow.
Right? So you don't want to do that. But now it's gotten one step worse. So now those links are being distributed throughout the dark web, and hackers and or pedophiles are getting on, especially on classrooms with kids, and they're flashing pornography.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So that's the next version of Zoom bombing, is they got the links, they get on, And as soon as everybody's there, they grab hold of the meeting, and now, voila, they can start showing pornographic photos and, you know, to young kids. And no parent wants to learn that that happened in such and such a school.
Sure.
So, again, the onus is still on the meeting organizers to keep those logins very private and change them.
Now, that makes total sense.
That's number two. Number three is Zoom. Now that's for all virtual conference software. The third one is only right now associated with Zoom, and that's that Zoom has a flaw where there's a bug in their software that I can go through your Zoom account, and I can actually grab hold of your complete computer and turn on the camera and microphone and listen into your entire conversation in the house.
Wow.
While you're not even using your computer.
Oh, my.
So the way you protect yourself from that is when you're not using your computer, a very simple hack, take a Post-it note and put it over your camera.
Sure.
And only use your camera when you're actually in a Zoom meeting. And if you're not using your computer, there's nothing stopping you from taking the lid and closing it and putting your computer in hibernate mode or sleep mode so that your computer's not being functional so that somebody can't listen to the microphone. Or another resort of avoiding using the microphone is to never use the microphone on your computer itself, to actually use an attached microphone or a Bluetooth headset to your computer, or to use your phone like I'm using right now. So I'm not using my computer audio. I'm using the phone talking to you, even though I'm using conference software.
Now, that's great advice because, you know, these are things, and I think it's, you know, especially if you're working from home, you may be doing it in an office, but a lot of times folks are doing it at the kitchen table or the breakfast bar or, you know, maybe in the dining room, and you're really not paying attention because there's so many distractions as well. So trying to build these habits, you know, I think are pretty critical to avoid, again, these issues of somebody getting onto your system, getting onto your network, seeing what's going on in your house. I mean, one of the things I do simply is if I'm not using the laptop or the PDA, I turn it off, you know, at the end of the day, and make sure it's, you know, shut down and you can't have access then.
Yeah, the actual device can't function if it's powered off.
Right. That's a little harder with the phone, you know, at the end of the day.
No, but you can power that one off, too.
No, you can.
You've got to disconnect from it.
You can.
Which
is important these days with all the stress there to take some time for yourself. And, you know, this technology, I think as much as it has been an amazing run for decades in terms of technology and the evolution of technology and how it's helped business, it's also created that much more stress, you know, because there's an instantaneous response and demand and or self-imposed to look at that feed. And that's even harder when you're at home because at least at the office, you have a little bit of separation, you know, at the end of the day. And now it's just becoming part of a lifestyle. And I would think that's something that, you know, again, a discipline that we all just have to be conscious of if we're going to remain, you know, in good mental shape, you know, at the end of the day and not have this constant treadmill of information.
Yeah, well, that ties back to my discussion with phishing. That's why phishing is getting so successful, is because you're getting inundated with all these emails, meetings, calendars, family, stress, and it's at that level of weakness that you unfortunately click on the wrong email that unleashes the ability to take control of your computer, which could be malware, a virus, or worse yet, ransomware.
I know our, and you know him as well, Chris, our Hunterdon County Sheriff was one of many, including our prosecutor, and many of our police chiefs throughout the county just put out a social media messaging over the weekend, but Sheriff Brown mentioned in particular a lot of these IRS scams that are coming up, both on the internet, both on emails and that. So especially to be cognizant that the IRS is not going to be calling you, you know, at the end of the day. You know, they're not going to be reaching out.
It's all hot topics now, right, Chris? So we're getting constantly bombarded with information about coronavirus and COVID-19. We're all a little bit on edge about when we're getting our stimulus checks.
Sure.
We're all on edge because it's tax season, and we don't know how to deal with that and the postponement, the extension. We're all on edge because we're trying to get locked into the unemployment system that's way overburdened right now. And all of those emails that you normally wouldn't get are coming to you now.
Right.
And you don't recognize who they are. You recognize who they're coming from. But many of these hackers are posing in the guise of those authorities. And that's when they're taking advantage of you clicking on the wrong email.
Well, let's segue a little into the world of hacking, you know, at the end of the day, because that seems to be, you know, obviously a huge concern. You've talked about, you know, again, different entry and access points. I never thought about this. I was on a call a few weeks ago, Chris, and somebody had said in terms of our IT vulnerability, think about all the devices now that we plug in to a USB port. And, you know, sometimes it's off our laptop, sometimes it's off our desktop at work or at home. And how that USB port now is charging my phone or charging some other device that's all of a sudden created another entry point. And I never really would have thought twice about it. But I'm sure that opens up the door at least to potentially being hacked.
Yeah, well, again, we were talking a little while ago about how we went into a distributed workforce. So I need to back up a little bit and tell you about what is supposed to happen to try and protect a business, and then we'll delve down into what you need to do at home.
Okay.
So in the world of business, if I'm protecting a business, we try and keep all the computers that are part of that business contained and managed by somebody with the knowledge of keeping them up to date properly. That's what my business does. There's a number of different steps to do that. I'll get to that in a second. But at least they're contained in a box. They're contained in that building somehow. Or they're contained with it virtually in that building because they're all part of the same network. So if they're all contained in the same network, they're kind of protected as long as the employees don't do something to let the bad guys in.
Right.
And that's why we were talking about phishing before. If we can do all the protections we want, but a phishing email is opening up all the windows and all the doors and saying, the heck with the locks, just come on in. We're good. So that's why phishing gets around all that. But if we have everything all protected and we have the employees correctly educated, the only way to get into your network, into your business network, is from the outside in, which is called the internet. And the go-between, the thing that keeps the bad guys out and your data protected, is an appliance called a firewall. And that firewall is basically a device that monitors the traffic, the data that goes back and forth in and out of the building, and we only allow certain traffic to go out. And traffic is associated with different applications. So we're on Chamber Radio. There is a traffic that's allowing the data from our radio show to leave the Chamber of Commerce and go to a server in California. There's a firewall that's in the Chamber of Commerce that's allowing that data to go out there, and we know what that data is because it goes on a certain, what we call a port. So it's going to only use a certain door, and that door we're allowing to be open. So the firewall there. Unfortunately, many of us in our households don't have firewalls. Instead, we have something that we think is called a firewall, and that's called a router. And that's not a firewall. A router is basically a giant set of pipes that allows the data that comes over the internet to go in different places in your home. And that is not protecting you from anything. So now you might say, well, what should I do about that? Well, unfortunately, firewalls aren't tremendously expensive, but they're not cheap either. But the deal is that you don't have as much to lose in a household as you do in a business.
Sure.
I mean, let's face it. I know it's important that everybody's paycheck and bank accounts are important, but our net worth in our house, our cash flow, is most of the time underneath $100,000. In a business, we're in two commas. We're in the millions. So we have much more to lose in a business, therefore a firewall makes sense. So, but if people are freaked out, you probably should consider getting some type of a firewall in your house.
Well, wouldn't a firewall, though, also make sense for the house, you know, regardless of the income, but in terms of identity theft and the like?
Yeah, no, definitely. But like I said, identity theft can happen regardless of whether I'm using the firewall or
not.
Because
I apologize.
If you're not smart about the phishing emails, you're going to give it stuff away anyway.
Sure.
So, but yeah, absolutely. Identity theft is there.
What would be some alternatives,
Chris?
One
way to protect yourself, no doubt.
What could be some alternatives to individuals, you know, at home that you know, aren't going to do the firewall? Are there some other alternatives that could be potentially less expensive?
Right.
I don't know, Norton?
So another thing that's going on, Chris, is we've talked about the door between the internet and your household, or the door, the internet and your business. Now let's talk about the actual computer that you're using. So unfortunately, computers and devices are built by human beings, and human beings make mistakes. And those mistakes are out there somewhere, and these bad guys learn about them, and they take advantage of them. Some of the mistakes show up in our operating system, which is Microsoft Windows or iOS for our iPhones, or now it's Catalina for the MacBooks, or even Linux for those people that love to use the Unix operating system. Those operating systems constantly come with patches. And tell me if you raise your hand if you've heard of experienced this. You get on in the morning, and there's a message box on your computer that says, Windows would like to update your system right now. And you say, I don't have time for that. And so we delay it, and we delay it, and we delay it, and we delay it.
I've never done that. Never done that.
Those updates have security patches.
Sure.
But Microsoft and Apple have given them to you, but you're not putting them on your computer. And those security patches are intended to stop people from taking ownership of your computer. So if you're not going to put them on your computer, you're still letting the bad guys potentially in. So, and on top of that, then we have virus protection. So we have antivirus protection, and we have malware protection. And malware and virus are kind of the same thing, but a virus is a subset of malware. Just understand that. So there could be robots running on your machine. There could be crypto lockers running on your machine. So you have to get the latest definitions of your virus protection and the latest definitions of your malware protection, because every time a new virus is discovered out there, it's the definitions of how to recognize it are being shared by the virus protection companies, and they're trying to get it on your computer as fast as possible so that you can be protected from the latest technical virus that's out there. So you should be updating your operating system and you should be updating your antivirus protection and your malware protection. And you need to do that as soon as possible, and you probably should do it overnight so it's not impacting your world during the day.
And Chris, is it good advice then once you've done that or in the evening or in the morning to reboot your computer? Is it true that a lot of those things won't take unless you reboot?
Yeah.
Or your,
yeah,
or your
some of
device?
It actually some of it actually needs to be rebooted because the program that's running can't let go or can't be updated until it stops. So you have to reboot the computer to stop all the programs so that they can get updated and then start again. So yes, that's why you get asked to reboot the computer from time to time. No doubt.
No, that makes total sense. So, you know, it definitely a wealth of information. If you are just joining us, we've got another about maybe 10, 15 minutes left here on this special edition of Hunterdon and Chamber Radio. This is Chris Phelan with the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce coming to you live from our studios. We've got Chris Bianco of Team Logic IT coming over the internet into our studios, many states away. But Chris has been a long time our general manager here at Hunterdon Chamber Radio, one of our founding members of the team. And we miss having you in the morning as well. I want to say that. I miss having good morning, Hunterdon. But it's great to have you back here on the radio. Maybe, you know, one of the other things we can just...
Positive emotions come over when I was doing that show, and boy, I tell you, it's still in the back pocket, but I'd love to get back to doing that.
It was great. We had a our good news morning where we had so much put out there to the community and the like, and we'd love to have you when the time is right back regularly on the air. You know, let's talk in the last few minutes a little bit about etiquette. I mean, I'm very cognitive, obviously not today on this show. I've been scratching my head. I've been itching something here. But this whole new domain of, you know, conference meetings and having all these different connectivities opens up a whole new world of etiquette for people. The one thing I like about Zoom is as the host, I can actually mute everybody. It's a very efficient meeting. In all seriousness, etiquette is something that people really have to start thinking about because I've already seen over the last couple of weeks some pretty funny back things happening in the background. And I've seen people try to put up funny backgrounds that don't quite work. And all I see is like their eyes and their lips moving. Pretty neat things in the world of etiquette happening.
Right. Yeah, it goes back to you only have one chance to make a first impression, right?
Sure.
So now all of a sudden we have created this environment where you get to physically see the individual. And not only have we created that environment, but we've put people in a non-business environment, and so now we're mixing our personas.
Right.
And on top of that, we're living in an environment where there are some other people that are not part of our business world that are infiltrating our environment. So what I want to do is just quickly remind people about the things that you might want to think about before you get on to a Zoom platform or any other virtual conference room platform. The first thing is that usually the software gives you the ability to preview how you look. So you should probably do that every time. I've noticed from time to time, in fact, right now while I'm talking to you, I'm looking at myself basically in a mirror. I'm seeing myself through my camera so that I know that I'm properly framed in the picture that's being shown on your screen right now. I decided to use my Team Logic shirt, right? I have an emblem that is trying to represent Team Logic. So I'm wearing my colors. I'm also cognizant of what you see in the background. I'm not letting you see my messy kitchen or my unmade bed or, my pets that are what might be walking around or anything like that. One of the things that's really cool about the actual Zoom product, and maybe many people don't know this, is that you can actually create virtual backgrounds behind you. So many times now you're starting to see somebody get on a split screen, much like we are today, and you'll see somebody that's sitting in front of a window with a tremendous city view. That's a fictitious background, and Zoom allows that to be virtually shown. So if I was using Zoom, I can actually show you a logo of TeamLogic right behind me. So I can actually show my marketing message all the time in Zoom. Now, if I can't do that because I'm not using Zoom today, I could still set something up behind me that might be able to be marketing my company. And that makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
But then on top of that, let's go through what we're supposed to look like in our day. We really should dress for success, wear your suit, wear a logoed shirt, make sure you've brushed your teeth and you've combed your hair or anything like that. You shouldn't be eating lunch while you're doing it. You shouldn't be over here taking notes and being off camera. You shouldn't be, obviously, if you're not talking. Here's an interesting one. What people don't realize is a lot of these systems, they keep bringing the most current person who's talking to the forefront, and they start making the people who haven't talked in a while, they start to drift off and disappear. You've all seen that?
Sure.
Well, that doesn't mean you're gone. And there is a way that I can actually show everybody on the screen all at once. So if you're somebody that's being silent and all of a sudden you're having lunch or unfortunately cleaning your picking your teeth or something, there's somebody that's potentially going to see that. And oh, by the way, that meeting might actually be recorded as well. So you need to be on camera all the time. And realize that because you don't have a human in front of you, we as human beings bring down our priority, our level of concern, and we start doing silly things because we don't think anybody's seeing us. And it's unfortunate, but you're going to get caught in a very embarrassing situation. And then you talked about people doing stuff in the background. We've all heard about there was one kid that woke up for class when he was in his bed. We heard about the guy who got up and walked back to the bathroom behind him, and while everybody was watching, he was didn't bother closing the bathroom door. You shouldn't have a Zoom meeting in the bathroom. That's another one. I know that goes without saying, but we
sure
shouldn't be doing that.
No, sure.
So all of those things. And then on top of that, make sure you're always focusing on your camera. This doesn't look very good if you're looking just at my chest, and then we have this one as well where you just see the tops of my eyes. So we don't want to do those types of things. You've always got to pay attention to what's going on.
So I'm going to start for the last minute or two looking at the camera, Chris, looking at you, because I have a habit. We're on the radio, so we're kind of going through both worlds here. But we did have a question come up from one of our listeners, and
sure.
Elizabeth is asking, do you need antivirus protection for Macs?
Yes. In fact, more so now than ever. Years ago, Apple said that they were invincible of virus protection and malware because everything was encapsulated and secret in the world of Apple. And now, because more third-party applications are getting built, Apple is actually becoming more hacked than the Windows operating system. Absolutely.
Is there specific, I guess, then software and applications that service Macs versus PCs?
I know one of them we were looking at as Malwarebytes.
Okay.
Would be one that I would look at. That one works for all operating systems. It's spelled Malwarebytes.
Okay. And is that one that would be recommended for Macs? We had a follow-up from Elizabeth on that.
Yeah, that was for Mac. That's actually for all operating systems, including Mac.
Okay. Anyone in particular just for the Mac platform?
That's the one that I started putting out on my client software that had Macintosh. So that's the one I would recommend at this point.
Excellent. Excellent. Elizabeth says thank you to you, and thanks for that question, Elizabeth. And if folks do have questions or follow-up, feel free to reach out to us here at the Hunterdon County Chamber. You know, Chris, we've got a tremendous resource page up on our website. This is being in partnership with the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development. It's got all different resources for business on a federal, state, county, local level. You know, maybe you take a look at it, Chris, too. Maybe there's some technology information we want to put up there and some resources for business during this response phase as well. In addition to that, let me just see if we've got time. Elizabeth had one more question. She used to use Norton for a PC. What about that for Macs?
I used to use Norton for PC. What about Norton for Macs?
Yeah, using Norton, the Norton virus programs for Macs.
Yeah, so understand this. There is not going to be one. There's not going to be one antivirus software out there that is going to beat them all. They all share their information. They've realized that the way to survival is to simply share definitions amongst them. So there's a consortium of the antivirus world that makes sure that the viruses that they're protecting against are being defeated. So no one software is going to be any better than any other one. The reason I had to recommend Malwarebytes is because some of the other antivirus software didn't work properly with as running on the system. So now, especially because Catalina just came out, and what happens is Apple hides all their code, their operating system code. So as soon as somebody updates their Mac to a new operating system, unfortunately, many of the antivirus companies are caught behind the eight ball to try and scramble to make it work with the new operating system. And I know Malwarebytes does work with the Catalina operating system. But if Norton works with your operating system in Mac, whether it's Catalina or it's Sierra, then you're fine. But the reason I had to recommend Malwarebytes for Mac is because it was only one of the few that were running with the newest Catalina operating system today.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Elizabeth, for that. And again, if you've got some other questions, please feel free to reach out to us. Again, we've got a tremendous resource page up on the front page of the website. This video will also be intact. We've got a link on the front page to the video and the podcast of this broadcast and all the other broadcasts that, again, we're putting together under this Meet the Experts series with the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce and in partnership, again, with the Office of Economic Development for Hunterdon County. Chris Bianco from Team Logic IT, I really want to thank you, Chris. Do you want to give out your contact information if folks would like to reach out to you, as a business owner as well?
Yep. Well, first of all, Team Logic IT has got 200 locations throughout the country. I happen to be in the Myrtle Beach, South Carolina area, and we're a very large managed service provider organization, but I own the business down in Myrtle Beach. So I don't own the entire Team Logic IT, so I have to clarify that. My contact information go to teamlogicit.com/MyrtleBeachSC, Myrtle Beach SC, the initials of South Carolina. Phone number is 803-232-9200, and you can email me at cbianco@teamlogicit.com.
I really want to, again, thank you, Chris, for joining us. I want to thank you as well because you've helped us really keep Chamber Radio going. You've been a great support on the backside as we do these special editions, and you've been a tremendous partner with Chamber Radio for 10-plus years now, and really want to thank you for all the technical expertise you do to help support our business community here in Hunterdon County.
Oh, thank you. It's been a cherished relationship, Chris, and I'm so glad that we hooked up years ago, and I really still relish the relationship and the opportunity. Despite my deserting Hunterdon County a little bit, I still have a big, it has a big place in my heart for it, so definitely want to keep it going.
No, I appreciate it very much, and again, thank you for joining us here today. And again, I want to encourage folks to visit HunterdonChamber.org. Right up on that front page, you'll see a link to the coronavirus business resource page. We are updating that daily, several times a day, in fact. So for the latest information, you know, please do that. This is a partnership with the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the Hunterdon County Office of Economic Development. We've got links up also to the resource page that has all of our videos, and there'll be more videos to come. I, again, can't say enough to all of our big thank you to all of our first responders, to all of our law enforcement, to everyone at Hunterdon Healthcare as you continue to keep us safe here in Hunterdon and beyond. Want to thank the folks at Hunterdon County Office of Emergency Management, the Hunterdon County Department of Health, really helping us through these troubling and trying times. Want to say hello to Larry, who just said hello there on Facebook Live. So thanks, Larry, for watching. And again, if we can be a help, if the Office of Economic Development